Hey,
what up, girl?
Hey.
I'm like so excited to talk to you. I'm
so excited too.
I miss you. I miss you.
Me too.
You are in a category of people for me that are like right in this sweet spot where, you know, we were at school at the same time, not in the same class, but at the same time we were there. And I got to see so much of your work and so much of your progress. But at the same time, can you count with me the number of like long conversations we've ever had?
Oh, yeah. Like
ever? I feel like I know ever. You, but I'm like, I don't.
I know. I have the same thing for me. Yeah. Yeah.
I love
that. So much affection for you. And I feel like I know you, but I'm like, we've never really sat down and gotten to know each other.
And it is shocking how many people, I even sometimes booking someone on this show is what it takes for me to realize that that is my relationship with them. That's when I realized, I'm like, oh, I don't know them. I don't actually know them. I just know they were great in that thing. That's so much of how I feel about people. I really enjoyed seeing you at school. I'm trying to remember if we ever directly work together on any like plays or anything. I don't think so. Right.
No, we didn't. No.
So really, yeah, really just very adjacent and seeing your, I think the first thing I ever saw you in was the Caroline Cava thing.
Oh yeah. Where I had blown out my knee.
Yes, you were in crutches.
I was in crutches. I tore my, this is how klutzy I am. So I had tore my meniscus just doing a warm up, like a vocal squat right before the final dress rehearsal. And it was a 4-woman show. So it was like, okay, what are they going to do? Like we didn't have understudies at school. So I spent that night in the hospital.
There's a lot of entrances and exits. It's a show where people are constantly like, hey, I'm in here now. And now I'm leaving. Yeah. Like it's
so many. And so I ended up, what happened was it was like, okay, so I think that was like a Thursday or a Wednesday that happened. And I'm in the hospital and they're not able to do my surgery until the swelling had gone down. So I, you know, I was like kind of in limbo anyway for the weekend. So I said, is there any way I can do my play? And the doctor said, yeah, sure. And then so I got a lot of pain medication. So I can't really remember the performance, but I did it all on crutches and all those entrances. You could hear me off stage for miles coming in.
Let me say, like every Caroline Cava play I ever saw, including the ones I was in, I'm sure yours was one of many excellent performances in a play that made no sense to me whatsoever. That I walked away from like a lot of interesting acting moments throughout the whole goddamn thing. But if you want me to tell you the story of the play, we're going to have to get, I don't know, Wikipedia involved or some shit. Because I don't know. Yeah. I have no idea what just happened.
It was a pretty obscure one. Yeah.
I watched that one with Matt Bullock right next to me. It was me and him. Yeah, it was one of the plays I got to like watch. Well, I later like assisted him. So we had I got to watch August Osage County with him, which is 3.5 hours long, a lot of times. But one of the plays I got to see with him was that one. And that's kind of a memory for me. Let's go back. We almost never talk about school, but let's go back. I'll ask you my only stock question, Lauren, where are you from?
All right. Well, I grew up in a tiny little town, less than 1500 people, called Tryon, North Carolina.
Okay.
It's like right outside Asheville.
Okay.
I get really Southern when I say that. When I was growing up, we moved around a lot. So my family moved around every 3 to 5 years. So we bounced around from different places in North Carolina to Ohio, back to North Carolina, all around. So we never really had a place that we planted. But when my dad was laid off when I was in high school, it was a big blessing in disguise because it was the first time that my family really got to decide, well, what place that we've lived in all of these places feels the most like home. And my parents have been there ever since.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Were you moving because of dad?
Oh, moving because of dad. Yeah. My dad was a metallurgical engineer and would manage the different plants that would open up. And so they'd kind of send us from town to town during that.
When you were a kid, what the hell did you think he did? Because that sounds like something way over the brain of it. Like, you know what I mean? Like some jobs, you're like, what does daddy do? Is he fixes cars? People bring in their broken cars in, he fixes them. And then it's like, he's a what now?
Uh-huh. Well, really, you know, I'm 31 years old. And to this day, this is still all I really understand about it.
I don't have any follow-up questions about his work, right?
Yeah, 1,000%. I won't be able to tell you.
Okay, cool. We'll move on.
All I really know is that he used to oversee ball bearings that would go on airplanes.
Oh, pretty shit. Well, cool. That's pretty important, right?
I know.
Your dad's one of the people I have to thank every time I don't have a panic attack every time I fly. Yeah. That's good. It's like the ball bearing guy is my friend's dad. It's gonna be fine. We're gonna be fine. That's awesome. And what's the rest of the family dynamic like? What else you got going on at home? Dad's doing metallurgic engineering.
Actually, not anymore. So he pivoted, and while I was growing up, he also flipped a lot of houses.
Cool.
So he was really big into carpentry. And when we moved back to Tryon, he started his own contracting business. So Caraman Properties Incorporated. We have lot of shirts. So my dad does that. And he's renovated a lot of the old historical buildings in town. Like we have a one screen movie theater. And my dad came in and redid that and the old train depot. So it's really cool. I get to go through this town that's really nostalgic to me. And I can be like, oh,
just making stuff better everywhere he goes.
My dad restored that. And now, you know, like the movie theater gets to, you know, stay alive. And it's really sweet. And my mom owns an antique mall. And I call it a mall because it's huge. She has a bunch of vendors. So she has an antique mall down there. And she's also a real estate agent. And now my 91-year-old Mimi, who is just the best person alive, she is amazing, big influence into who I am today. She just moved in next door. So she lived in Texas my whole life and just recently moved in next door. So it's amazing. I'm really close with my family. I'm an only child. My parents and I have always been really close. I've really been close to Mimi my whole life. So I go home and visit a lot. So now it's nice that I get to see them all at the same time.
Okay. So there's like there's a lot of stereotypes about homeschooled kids and then only children.
Oh my God. Yes.
You've heard them all. So which ones apply to you, Lauren? Yeah. Which ones are true for you?
Just that I'm a little freak.
I'm going to take that in the way that's fun for me, but tell me what you think that means.
No, I think, you know, only children get a rap of, you know, being self-involved and spoiled and all of those things. But I think what kind of helped me combat falling into that trope was being a perpetual new kid in all of these towns as I would move around. So, you know, being the new kid every town and being an only child, my parents were really involved in, okay, how do we find community? How do we make sure we build her social skills? So she's not just like a little like freaky theater kid that puts on plays just for, you know, my mom and dad at night. So a big way that my parents did that is they would always, you know, they'd find us a new church. So we are not religious anymore, but we have been, the Caramans have run the gamut of Christianity. We were Methodists. We were non-denominational. We were Quakers for a couple of years because the Quakers had the good volleyball team. So
that's good. You played the Bakers and the Candlestick Makers, right?
you know, I guess. And and they also plugged me into community theater in every town. So that's how that all started.
That makes a lot of sense.
The theater.
It seems like with the antique thing and dad's definitely got a taste for the creative renovation kind of thing. So it's like, they're maybe not professional artists, but man, you got a lot of creativity in the house for you to be inspired by. And then is that how you kind of end up in, is theater the first thing you pick? Do you have like, I did some T-ball and karate, which was a huge mistake before I found the thing that clicked for me. Did you have some other activities? You seem like a soccer girl. Am I guessing that wrong?
Oh my gosh. Actually, completely opposite. I could not do soccer because I hate running. Like I was a kid that sat down in the grass. Oh, my favorite running story is when I was in the fifth grade. We have to run the mile. And my little 10-year-old self was like, okay, you can do this. So I ran the three of the four laps. And on the fourth lap, I was like, I can't do this. Maybe if I just close my eyes it'll go faster. So like my 10-year-old self, I'm like running the lab with my eyes closed, and I ran right into my elementary school bully. And we both fell down and we both skinned our knees. And then they made us run the mile again the next week after our knees healed. So that went really well for me.
So athlete yeah. first, but because, yeah. you know, you're just not feeling it. You decide theater, cool.
But I did play totally
relate to that too. I was almost a professional football player. And then I don't yeah. know. This is like,
yeah.
Just I like locker rooms. I'm like not a locker yeah. room guy.
No, thank you. No, but I did actually. I was really sporty. I played basketball and I played volleyball. I was actually a junior Olympic.
You gotta play volleyball. You're tall as hell for the ladies. They're gonna nab you up. We gotta at least just put her in the front and go like this.
I was the middle blocker. And in high school, they made me choose between playing the lead in the play or being on varsity. And I had to tell the girls that I'd played years and years of volleyball with and doing junior Olympics and all that stuff that I wanted to do the play. And they were yeah. great about it. But that's how that started.
So what makes you decide 100% that that's like school, that that's college, that that's like step two is doubling down on that and not anything else?
Well, this is a cool story. You want to hear it?
I just asked
you. It's very. I was like, actually, let me just test you and hear the answer.
You need some affirmation, but please, Lauren.
Please tell God. Me everything. Lauren, please.
If that's what you need.
Every word.
Yeah, no problem.
no. So it was in the seventh grade.
Okay.
And Elizabeth and Layla and I actually grew up together. We were best friends in middle school and high school. And we used to go on like a lot of family vacations.
Word.
So we had this moment together, which was really sweet. And I was on a family vacation with her family in Florida. And we went on this sailing day trip where we got on this little sailboat. And the captain of the ship was the captains of the ship. They were this couple named Bruce and Sheila. And Bruce and Sheila were iconic. They were just full of life. They were so happy. They were so open. And I just remember sitting there in awe, watching them on this boat, thinking, you two have the most incredible life. Like, how do I get a life like this? And so we just started picking his brain about that. And Bruce was like, you know, for 25 years, Sheila and I was something like corporate lawyers. So something like that. And they were like, we just hated it. You know, we were finding that every free moment that we had, we were just trying to get out on the boat. And so finally, I just turned to Sheila and I said, Sheila, what are we doing? Like, why don't we just make our hobby our career? And that's when they decided to start the business. And, you know, as a seventh grader, I really latched onto that. I said, oh, okay, to get that kind of life, like, it's about like investing in making my hobby. My career was my hobby. And the thing I loved and lit me up the most was acting. So that's when I knew, really.
That is such a good lesson that I think that it landed on you perfectly. And I think mm-hmm. you were the right age for that, because mm-hmm. it would be so easy in your 20s or 30s to hear that story and be go like, yeah, you can do whatever you want after like a pretty substantial career as a corporate lawyer.
Yeah, like exactly. I bet. I hear that at 30 and I'm like, yeah, you guys have the money for a sailboat. I'll go
start a business yeah, and buy definitely. A sailboat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 1,000. Yeah, so it doesn't ring as you know.
But you didn't do that. Now, you just were like yeah. wide-eyed, innocent, like, yes, follow me your yeah. dreams.
I want. Genius. That sounds
Bruce,
amazing.
Sheila, yeah. fucking let's
Thank
go.
You.
You changed
Thank
my
you guys.
Life.
Yeah.
That is so cute. That's a great yeah. story, though. And hopefully, yeah. hopefully that's something that, you know, and I think that's also like the kind of people you often encounter on vacations. You find yeah. those people all over the place, especially people who are like expats, if they're in the Caribbean or something like that. But like, there's a lot of people. I remember going to Puerto Rico and half the people who ran hostels there were like, yeah, I came here with my wife and then we got divorced. She left. I stayed. I love it here. Mm-hmm. I was like, fuck it. And they almost yeah. always say a version of fuck it, even if they don't yeah. swear. They're
yeah,
like, we 1,000%. Decided, nah, fuck it. We're going to fucking
yeah,
do
fuck it.
We're going to go. I remember Mike's girlfriend, Rebecca Brinkley, her grandfather mm-hmm. and grandmother did some shit like that with the Keys. And now the family still has the house. They went there for
That's
like
so
a wedding.
Cool. Yeah.
And the grandma was like, I like it. What if we didn't go back? And then they did it.
And they never came back.
Again, a lifetime as a professor and then a doctor, you know, that helps. But I think it's a really good notion. And I'm glad that you got a hold of it. So did you do the high school program at School of the Arts?
I did. So yeah, I a couple years later after the, you know, sailboat moment.
Of course.
I ended up doing the summer session when I was a teenager.
Cool.
And then after summer session, I went
the fucking full gamut of School of the Arts, girl.
I am a pickle through and through, baby.
All day.
So the summer session, I went, oh, this is the place. And then I went to high school.
Because it's then fucking college. And you're like fucking 13 years old and you get to go on this college campus and be like, yeah, I want to do this for the next 10 years.
This is so cool.
Yeah,
and it was such a great experience.
I love that for you. What was it like? And I haven't asked this of enough people, but I want to know, what is that feeling like when you're waiting on the goddamn letter with all the people in your high school class you know are not going to get in? Because the numbers suck. I mean, as they should, because it shouldn't feel like you have to go to the high school program to get in. That would be fucked up. If it was like half,
you'd
be like, well, goddamn, if you don't get in the high school program, you pretty much don't have a shot to go. So it's good that the numbers are what they are, but it's got to be brutal to be in those rooms.
Yeah, it's not cute. But I'm really proud of my 18-year-old self. Oh, wait, hold on. I'm like kicking. Oh, it's a trash can. I was like, what? I'm destroying Steven's room. Okay.
Are you proud of your current self as you were
I was like, wait, hold on. This turned into therapy. But yes. No, I'm really proud of myself because I was like, you know what? I'm going to stay away from the sea of everyone getting their acceptance or rejection letters. And I just went to my dorm room and I said, 5 minutes before class is when I'm going to go to the mailbox. And I was like, I think everyone will have their letters. So I held out and like everyone was texting like, do you know, do you know, do you know? And I just turned my phone around. And then 5 minutes before class, I walked into an empty mail room and that's when I got my letter.
So mature.
So it was really satisfying. I know. Who is she?
And do you, it feels like from the glow through the computer that I'm sensing, that you feel like that contributed to the yes that was in the letter, you know, just the fact that you had the poise and you dealt with it the mature way, that might have even changed what was in that letter, you know, if it had not been what you needed it to be. It was now because you handled it like a fucking adult.
Like a pro. And if I hadn't got the answer that I'd hoped for, at least I would have been able to, you know, have my guttural sobs alone in the mailroom, and that would have been poetic in itself, you know?
That would have been quite the experience. and that would have been a good story about how you ended up. Where would you have gone?
Oh gosh, where
did you have another
I had a big ride to SMU. So I was really thinking about that.
Well, you need a big ride to SMU unless you got a ride to SMU.
Because it is
the most expensive
I mean?
School in the state of Texas. Isn't
that? Yeah.
Which is not to say nothing. But it's also like one of my favorite things about Texas is how easy it is to get in-state tuition there. You have to have like an address for like 6 months or some bullshit. Not like North Carolina where you have to conceive a child, raise it to be 18, and then you can get in-state tuition.
Exactly.
So I want to.
Where in Texas are you from?
I was born in Dallas, but I moved to Austin when I was like 7.
Okay. So do you know Granbury?
No.
It's outside Fort Worth, a tiny town. That's where my Mimi lived my whole life. So I'm like Texas adjacent. I go every Christmas out there to visit my family.
It rings a little bit of a bell. It's so funny because before me, my dad's generation and my mom's and most of our family, aside from the ranch we used to have in kind of central Texas, almost all my family history for the last couple of generations is in that Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Mm-hmm.
But I moved away from it so young and we ended up in Austin until I graduated. And so I really I can name drop and be like Mansfield County. I grew up in Arlington, but I don't know what any of that shit means. It's funny that you said Granbury. It almost threw me off because my parents are from Grand Prairie.
Oh, yep.
Which is not far from there at all.
Not far from there at all.
Both went to high school there. But there are other episodes that are about me, Lauren Kerriman. So let's talk about... No, you can always ask questions, but I'm going to redirect it quickly so that people don't get mad at me. I talk enough about you as it is. So let's talk about the jump, because that's my new thing that I'm very interested in. You end up at School of the Arts at, by my math, was 16?
Oh yeah, 15 was when I did summer session.
Okay, so you do summer session 15, but you're living on campus at 16, right?
Yeah, 16, 17, maybe, I think. Yeah.
That sound right? Okay, so.
Yeah, so I'm somewhere around there.
So you enter into this program for a more permanent basis. Let's say that your arrogant, you know, young brain is like, I'm definitely getting into the college program. So you're psyched in for this five-year thing you're about to do. You have an idea, in theory, of what that school's going to do for you. And hopefully what you'll then be able to do upon graduation. You're like, oh man, I'm going to go to the school. They're going to teach me how to fucking triple threat this shit to death. Okay. And then when I get out, I'm going to XYZ. And I want to answer that in a second. So hold that thought. Examples that I've thrown out before, just to be specific so people understand what I'm talking about. Some people enter because they really fucking want to be on Broadway. Some people want to be on TV. Some people just want a job. All sorts of different things. You go through this whole program. It's never what the fuck you thought it was going to be. You get to the other end of it and you leave. And now, in theory, you have at least probably a slightly different idea of what exactly now you want and what you want to do and what you're now prepared to do based on everything they just fucking shoved in your brain and body.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sounded worse than I wanted it to. And I take back adding the last two words to that sentence. So we're going to end it with brain, period.
Yeah.
But with that being said, how are those two moments different for you? What's the first? What's the second?
Yeah. You know, when you're, I'll start this by saying that my path when I left college has been so vastly different than anything I could have ever imagined. And now that it's transpired, it's exactly what I needed. But when I was a kid at school, like I had this idea, and I think kind of what was implanted in my brain, whether consciously or subconsciously, was, okay, I'm on the sailboat. I'm going to be an actress. Okay, how do I do that? NCSA is amazing. Okay, I'll go to summer session, then I'll go to the high school program, then I'll go to college, and then there's a showcase. And then showcase is where I'll get my agent. And then, you know, I'll be a series regular on a TV show by the time I'm 25. That's how it works, right?
Right.
And
of course,
it could not have been further from that when I left.
Wait, what?
And
hold on. Stop the fucking presses. I've done like a lot of episodes of this show, and this is the first time I've ever.
Hold on, sorry. Okay. Oh, I touched my. I'm so not technologically savvy. I just like was like touching this the headphones back and forth, and I was like, I can't hear you. Now I can hear you. I can't hear you. Okay,
can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
Well, don't fucking touch it anymore, Lauren.
I can't help it.
Do a thing over here. No, you got to get excited. Touch your hair. Yeah, get yourself like a Molly Shannon kind of like compulsive vibe going on here. That's okay. I don't know. I was doing some stupid bit making fun of you sardonically, but you were saying it didn't go how you thought it would go. But
yeah,
and I think that makes sense. The perspective that you have on it is awesome. And I want to get to that in a second. Mm-hmm. But real quick for me, fill in what those two things are, though. Like, what did you think when you went into the program of this is the series regular thing? You got that. When you left, did you have the exact same mentality you had that you when you went in? Like, I'm still on that trajectory? Or did you already, before you even really like set foot in New York or wherever, did you know you wanted something different than you did when you were 18?
No, I did not know that I wanted and or needed. I did not want something differently. The thing that lights me up the most in this life is being an actor. That is like number one artistic satisfaction. And when I was in school, I really didn't know what it meant to be a multi-hyphenate. I actually kind of looked down on that. It was, you're an actor, bust. And so that's been a huge kind of lid that's been taken off in my life in these past years of, oh, it's not just one thing that I could be doing at one time. There's actually room for so much more. And all of these other artistic endeavors are informing who I am as an artist. They're flowing back into who I am as an actor. And then that flows into who I am as a model, or, you know, in any of the body positivity, you know, photo work that I do, storytelling series, all of these things. They're all a piece of who I am as a person, as and as an artist. And I'm so glad that the wacky turn that my life took after college has then led me to the point where I can really now sit in that and meet myself at all of those different places and know that they're all contributing to who I am. So that was a mentality I didn't have in school. But really, I think the best way to answer this question is, I mean, it all just kind of was a series of events that just kind of led to all of my unlearning and my healing, specifically in terms of my own body image. And when I was in, I think it was my junior year of college, you know, all of these years being at NCSA, one of the defining mantras that the school had that I love, that it still means so much to, you know, the essence of who I am now, is you are enough. You know, the more open and vulnerable and present and grounded and, you know, honest I can be in my own life, the easier that is to access when I'm in the space and any art form. But that mantra started to get a little fuzzy for me when I had a professor say, well, I don't know, girl, maybe you're a little too much. You're not going to be successful in this. You need to lose weight if you're going to be successful physically.
They said that to you?
Yeah. I had a handful of different professors draw me into meetings in which that was the topic of conversation, that, you know, I wouldn't be successful in my career unless I lost weight. And, you know, I had a teacher on a first day of rehearsal for a main stage show, while they were handing out the scripts to the, you know, the other actors, when it came turn for my script to be set down, they set a South Beach Diet book down in front of me instead.
Pause. And it, wait, yeah. Wait, I'm sorry. And we don't have to talk about who this is, but let's back that up for a second. What we're talking about is the first day of rehearsal, where mm-hmm. you're going to do the big table read and everyone's mm-hmm. going to hear the play for the first time in the voices of the characters that have been cast. You've had the cast for a while, but now you're finally going to do the work on the play. Mm-hmm. And please tell me if I reiterate this wrong. I'm only doing it to clarify for myself and maybe anybody who missed that, but they are going around and handing the scripts. All right, here's mm-hmm. yours, here's yours, here's yours. Mm-hmm. You get an extra mm-hmm. document, which is mm-hmm. it's a diet book.
It was a South Beach diet book. So it's, you know,
which is like, that's like a trend diet from the 90s. Yeah,
a fad diet from the 90s. Like,
okay,
you know, the as twisted as it is, you know, I don't hold animosity for the person that gave it to me, because from their perspective, we're in a very twisted cycle in terms of diet culture. And, you know, this was 10 years ago now. They really thought that they were doing me a favor. You know, right. This is something that they had used to help their diet culture journey, which in their brain wasn't toxic, but it was that
the
diet
way of
culture,
the world, right?
It was the way of the world, and that diet culture was the thing that made me an 8-year-old child who was, you know, funny and gregarious and silly, all of the sudden begin to think that I needed to take up less space in the world. I put myself on my first diet when I was 8 years old. So I'm a kid, and it was like, when I got that book at 19, I was at a place where it wasn't a surprise. You know, I had had a long, long history of yo-yo dieting and a terrible relationship to food and my own body. And, you know, my mantra was, when I'm skinny, it was like, when I'm skinny, yeah, I'll get the acting, you know, when I'm skinny, I'll wear the clothes I want. When I'm skinny, I'll get a boyfriend. I even used to think, when I'm skinny, I'll finally be in a folk band. It's like, what the fuck? Like, what the fuck?
I relate to this so much.
Do?
This is wild.
With any of that, it's crazy. You know, and I used to think I have wasted so much of my life not being skinny.
Right.
And it was after this light bulb moment of getting this book and then really starting to change the narrative for myself of what bullshit in this industry that I want to be a part of, am I going to accept? And what am I going to actively reject? That I started to believe, no, I haven't wasted any of my life being in the body that's mine. I've wasted a lot of my time believing that lie.
Right.
And that was when things started to really shift for me. So it was cool. You know, I got that book. And I was
how
like,
did you deal with that moment in that day? Did you say thank you? Did you say like, oh, what the fuck is this?
Oh. Like, oh yeah. I was like, you know, of course you're internally mortified and just like, you know, it was embarrassing. It's a lot of embarrassment that is just antiquated from diet culture where it's like, I don't need to be embarrassed about any of this, but I've been taught that I should be.
Right.
I've been taught to be embarrassed about who I am.
You know what's so hard for me to wrap my brain around? And I don't know if you know this about me, because you wouldn't unless we talked about it. But I struggled with my weight for my entire childhood, and not until I really got into my 20s and really got to like school of the arts and started not like all of the body positivity and health conversations are healthy in that environment. However, the big thing that affected me was one, I wasn't eating my parents' cooking, which was always a big problem with my weight growing up. There was always plenty of food and it was not great for you. And no one really knew what nutrition was. And then also, I just was kind of from Texas and also a part of my family that's just like, we're just not super active people. You know, we drive everywhere because it's hot outside. We, you know, not super sporty people. And so at the end of the day, just no activity and bad nutrition, you get big real quick. It's all it takes, really. And it's not the fuck wrong with that. But it's like, that's how I was for the longest time. And so many of the things you said about your childhood really resonate with me about that when I'm skinny shit, man, I remember that shit all the time. Uh-huh. That's when this will happen. And you know what? I actually think you're the first person I've ever heard articulated. I've never heard anyone else say it before, for sure. Uh-huh. That is a thing that just goes off in your head about. And I think people do it with all sorts of things. I mean, I know I've heard that from people who have trouble with addictions. It's like, well, when I get off, you know, when I'm done with this, which is not, you know, it can't be terribly far away from if you're having an issue that's unhealthy with food and stuff like that. That is something that you want to reckon with. But the thing to get back to what happened to you at school that I really want to comment on as a look, if you want to, I heard for the longest time, the reason there were two men for every one woman that was cast in the ensemble at School of the Arts and the drama school was because they were casting the ensemble for the industry. Hands up, not our fault. The industry looks like this, so we're going to cast an ensemble like this to try to fill those parts. Agree or disagree with that? There's a line of logic there that I can at least wrap my brain around. And I'm like, okay, that's a decision that was made at some point. Okay. If you think you need to make a certain thing to satisfy an industry, if that's how you're going to approach this educational process, as opposed to just teaching the people who want to learn it, would be another approach. But if you're going to take this, like we're feeding an industry, that's the whole point of what we're doing here. Okay. Let's say that that's your premise. Why cast anyone you think you need to change? Physically, especially the hardest change maybe to make in a young person. Like, yeah, they can physically change quicker than an older person maybe, but they, you know, if you think this person is too big, let's take aside the fact of whether or not that fucking matters. But let's say you think that and you're trying to pick a certain person.
That's an antiquated thought.
And, but even to know, have that thought process, then if they thought you were too big, why ever fucking put you in the thing? Well, if it, you know, like that seems to clash. Okay. It's like, well, then just pick your tiny girls. If you think the tiny girls are the only ones who are going to get jobs and that's all you want to spend time on, then what the fuck am I doing here as it's, you know?
And it's a complete, it is It is just a complete contradiction to the heartbeat of what it really means to be an actor. Like, to be an actor is to really meet myself where I am at, so I'm able to meet the character where they are at without judgment.
Right.
So it seems to me that any, you know, ideal that we all must fit a certain physical box is just feeding this toxic societal heartbeat and just the array of images that we're just inundated with regularly that aren't equitable.
Right.
So if I'm going to be a part of that, of changing myself to fit this industry that is not equitable, I am just doing the thing that I am just going against everything I believe.
Mm.
It's just not the heartbeat of why I want to do this work. And I don't want to be a part of that toxicity in the culture. So yeah. And you know, and I'm talking about, you know, body diversity too. A lot of times, you know, there's this trap of you see a person, you see someone's weight and you go, you judge health or you judge lifestyle. And it's like, we are not doctors. Weight does not equal health. And it's just, that is just like an old mindset that comes from how awful diet culture is.
But body mass index and health are not completely unrelated things. That's why they take them at the doctor, right? Because like,
I don't know. It's a slippery slope. I mean, I'm not qualified to talk about anyone else's health other than my own.
Sure.
And all I can say is I'm the heaviest I've ever been, and I'm the healthiest I've ever been. So
sure.
That's really the only thing I can, you know, I can only speak from my own perspective.
Right.
And I'm
but if
doctor,
you weigh 300 more pounds, there's a reasonable chance you might be less healthy than you are now, right?
I don't know. I'd have to talk to my doctor.
Really? That's inconceivably we need to leave room for that possibility.
I think we're much better off as people when we're only focused on ourselves and our own bodies and not putting that on and not really having any comments about anyone else's.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think that's true in a very specific way, but I think generally speaking, there's nothing wrong with people talking about how things work and what's going on. And I would never want to shut down a conversation because I'm worried about what might come of that conversation, because there might, you know, there might be value in it, you know, I don't know. And I'm not coming from some kind of like sarcastic Tucker Carlson.
I mean, the opposite of what
I'm saying, like, oh, so you're saying, believe me, that's not my position, but I do. I do think as someone who my obesity that I dealt with came from a very unhealthy lifestyle. I am not the thinnest I've ever been. I'm not the heaviest I've ever been. I'm pretty close to the healthiest I've ever been. I don't think it's correlated automatically, but I do think that my really poor health choices did lead to me having a really high BMI just on a data chart. And so that's like, for me, just for me, again, we're talking about ourselves as individuals. Me, I automatically think to myself, like if I were to have a kid, for example, and we're having a conversation about that, I'm going to recall my own experience and also recognize that that probably wasn't a completely isolated experience, that many people's bodies do genetically create extra fat on their bodies when they're unhealthy. That can be a thing that happens. If you have extra fat, does that mean you're unhealthy? No, we're on the same fucking page about that. Don't get me wrong. But I think it's like one of the things that makes me nervous sometimes is I feel like even reasonable people feel like they can't even talk about stuff. So I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. And we shouldn't go out of our way to hurt people's feelings, but we shouldn't go out of our way to like not be curious and not talk about stuff because we're worried about people who are fragile.
Yeah.
You know, it's both.
You have to meet in the middle of that, right? I think it's about changing the question.
The question isn't,
I see someone. You know, because oftentimes, you know, for myself, if growing up before my parents and I had really open conversations about you know, the topic of weight, mm-hmm. you know, if I would go home and I was really thin, it would be, oh, you must be really healthy. You must be really happy. You must be working out a lot. And like, so no, that was, those are the times I was right. really unhealthy. I was really yeah. starving myself. And the times that I wasn't, you know, it would be like, I would be in my life here really happy. And if I had gained weight, it would be like, is something going on that we mm-hmm. don't know about? And so I think it's about changing the question.
I agree with that.
And so, yeah, you know, it was like when I started really changing the question for myself and thinking, you know, I'm putting a lot of power into this omniscient voice that is this through line in our culture of you got to look a certain way of like, where right. did I pick up when you're skinny? When did I pick up? You know, X equals healthy, X equals unhealthy. Where, like, who is telling me this and why do I believe this?
Did you find out exactly when it is?
It's like,
I have one. You know, I have one that's exact. I remember the day I was like, okay. And I bought it for a long time. And then one day I was like, that's not true. And it blew my mind. I was watching fucking, what is it? The movie where Brad Pitt plays Achilles, the old, Troy.
Troy.
I'm watching Troy with my dad and I'm a fat kid and my dad's sitting next to me on the couch and he goes, I know you like acting, but I just got into theater. He's like, I know you like the acting, buddy. But honestly, if you really want to do that, if you really want to do it, you need to look like that. And mm-hmm. I was like, dude, like then I was like, okay, for a long time, I was like, that's the truth. And then even when I got to NCSA, I was like, a lot of these dudes look like fucking uh-huh. Jonathan Majors and shit. And like that, not all of them, but a lot of them do. So it seems like maybe my dad was right. It took till I was in my like mid to late 20s to be like, oh, that was never, ever true. Yeah. And Brad doesn't look like that 6 weeks after that movie's done. Cause that's not how fucking movies are made. And I let my dad, who works in the automotive industry, tell me how to be in Hollywood.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. That was the South Beach diet book moment,
right?
You know, that's exactly what that was. And, you know, I went, so that was the first time in my life I stopped dieting and I haven't since.
Hell yeah.
And that was a huge, you know, starting point in all of this healing. And it's been 10 years of just being really present to unlearning everything that I had learned growing up in this world, as we all do. And, you know, I didn't do the diet. I didn't lose weight for Showcase. It was the first time I was learning how to really stand up for myself. And
fuck yeah.
And, but the power in my own perspective, you know, there's a lot of power in my own perspective. I don't need to see the world through this lens I'm being taught to see it through. It's a nasty lens, and I don't want to. This life is so short. It's not something I want to move through the world with. So, you know, I didn't do the diet. I didn't lose weight, and I get to Showcase, and I didn't get any meeting. I didn't get any bites, and I was thinking it was disheartening. I was like, oh fuck.
You think
really,
they're like there?
I really believe in myself, but like, you know, that old way of thinking, I was like, were they right?
Right.
And, you know, healing isn't linear. Like, you're always going to be hit with things of like, are you ready to really move forward in your healing or are you not? And that was, you know, that was one of those moments for me. I was like, well, okay. You know, I'm still not going to allow this to make me move away from who I am and what my principles are and how I want to move through the world. Because if this industry causes me to do this, I don't want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
I'd much rather be a part of, I don't know, of, you know, challenging that conversation that we're also used to having, you know? That was definitely that moment for me.
Can I ask you, as someone who you said you mentioned that your relationship with food has changed a lot, as someone who is like, fuck these diets, I'm doing that shit. And I'm with you on that 100%. How do you now think about food so that you have a healthier relationship with it? You obviously, it's something we all got to do. That's the thing that we, you know, as much as we all want to look however we want to look, we got to fucking put food in our faces every day. We all got to do it. Uh-huh. So How does your brain think about it now, processing all that? I don't want to diet. You probably also, like me, because we were kids, and being kids, especially in the South, you develop unhealthy taste sometimes, some nasty shit that you like to eat. You can't eat it all the time. So how does that all kind of factor in for you, where you're not obsessing about a scale or a diet or any of this bullshit, but you're also not like leaning into maybe old habits that weren't helpful for you?
For many, many, many years, there was a morality placed on top of food. There are foods that are good. There are foods that are bad. I eat this food, I'm being bad. If I eat this food, I'm being good. It will then impact the way I view my own morality and other things as well.
They do that at restaurants, even in like the titles of the food. They'll be like sinful chocolate cake.
Exactly.
You're like, fuck you.
And it's like, stop that. That is so unhelpful.
I don't even buy into sin. And now I have to feel guilty.
Guilty. And yeah. So it's like guilt, you know, guilt can be useful if it helps you realize you have hurt someone else.
Sure.
But guilt can be so damaging. And from just in the, it's like at that restaurant, it is just in the fabric of food in Western culture. And it's like, okay, I'm going to have to start taking the morality out of this. Like for myself, I took the guilt out of it. I no longer see foods as good. Oh, I'm being good. Oh, I'm being bad. It's become a lot about intuitive eating. It's I don't count calories. I will never count a calorie again in my life. What makes my body feel good? But it's also, it's like when I want to fucking eat an entire pizza, I do. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's like when I stop thinking my body had to fit a certain standard. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. It's just like my relationship with food could be so, there was room for it to be fun. There was room for it to be nourishing. There was room for it to be exciting. Comfort food got to be comfort food. There's no guilt around that. It's something I share with other people. It's something I will cook a meal that could be classified as unhealthy. And so what? Who fucking cares? It's bringing me so much joy and it's making me feel good. But then, you just feel it in your body. It's like, and now today, like I am really craving a big ass salad. Great. It's a balance, It's right. It's like there's no morality in food. Like it's a fucking gift to get to eat. And we're lucky if we have the means to be able to do that.
Yeah, so. I think that's absolutely true. And I have a very similar thing too, where for me personally, I find that morality thing was in place for a long time too. And it's brutal because you really beat yourself up because you did this thing. And when you just let go of it and do, like you said, the intuitive eating, that's another big part of it, man. Okay. The whole three squares a day, like we're fucking prisoners and we have to, like, if you're not hungry, don't fucking eat anything. When I was a little kid, I was already a fat kid and they were like, yeah, you can take your lunch. It's lunchtime. And I'm like, I'm not really hungry. And they're like, you finish it. And I'm like, see, even that mentality around food is so broken, because now I think as a little kid, who also didn't grow up with like a lot of money, finish your food. Don't waste it. Don't be wasteful. So I got to eat three times a day. Can't throw any of it out, And then it's like, what if in between I want some chips or something? And then I got to eat dinner. It's such a restructuring. And I think you're totally right to say that so many of the questions we've been asking ourselves about all this stuff is just inherently a broken question. So it's not about finding these new answers to the old questions, because what a fucking waste of time is that? Like, let's figure out what we're actually trying to accomplish. And if you want to look fucking shredded, do that with your life and time. If you don't, who gives a shit? And don't let anybody tell you that you can't, unless you're an ab model and that's what you model is abs. You're in the ab model business specifically, which I don't think that it really is exactly a thing, but let's say it was, okay, well, then you got to keep your abs and you can grow your fat legs out and do whatever you want to do with your whole body. Cause it's like, everybody, I agree with you. We should have a libertarian mindset about health as best we can, but even more so about image. Who gives a fuck how anyone looks? This is the last thing I want to kind of say about this. I'm curious on your take on this, given all the stuff we just said. I've been having this thought recently that, like, I feel like I'm always trying to make some meaning and significance, right? Because I really think deep down, it's nihilism for me. It's a bedrock of who cares? We're ants on a rock. This is useless. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. I'm sorry you think it matters. That's what's like in the basement of my mind. But I'm like, what are we supposed to do? Just look at each other for our whole lives? We got to do something. So let's try to do something. And my thing is, like, I hear a lot of people preach, especially now, against like dopamine addiction. They're like the porn and the video games and the, not just things little boys like, but everything, the movies, the TikTok, the everything. It's like dopamine, dopamine, dopamine. And we're all addicted to it. It's poisoning. It's making us worse. And I hear that at first and I'm like, it kind of sounds right. But at the same time, it's like, well, what the fuck else are we doing here? Like, what are we trying to accomplish? Some huge goal that I don't know about other than to not feel like dog shit while we're here? Can't we feel good? And as long as your dopamine thing that you like, whether it's food or porn or video games or whatever, as long as it's not fucking your life up or anyone else's or hurting anybody, why do we give a shit? Why is it so toxic to like a thing that makes you feel good? You like some fried food because when you eat it, you think about when you were a kid and you're like, I'm not so fucking sad. Is that a goddamn problem? Really? Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like one to me. What are your thoughts on that kind of idea of indulging and thinking like you don't do too much, go out in the woods and sit or so? I don't know. Maybe mix in some of that shit, but I'm not giving up all the shit I like that makes my brain happy.
You know, I think it's personal to everyone. And I think only I know when the dopamine fix is an escape mechanism.
Mm.
And I could never say whether it was for someone else or not.
True shit.
And it's like this world is so fucking hard.
Right.
We should be squeezing the most joy that we can. But I'll say that our capacity for joy is only as large as our capacity to really move through our grief. So if all of these wonderful things that bring us joy, you know, they can't get capped if we're, you know, not actually letting ourselves feel everything we need to feel when we need to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you do need an escape mechanism. Mm-hmm. You know, my therapist is like, everybody, like, you gotta go. For me, Monk is my favorite show. She's like, you gotta go watch Monk for half an hour. You know, it's like you need your healthy escapes, and that's wonderful. But yeah, I think the question is less like take all of it out. It's just like, you know what works for you, you know what brings you joy, and you know what, you can feel it when you're doing something that's keeping you from dealing with something you need to deal with. Right. Those are two different things.
Right.
You know, it's not take away joy so people finally feel their pain. No, that would be terrible. Right. We're all feeling pain all the time. But it's just, how do we navigate both of those things in our life? Because this life isn't just about feeling good. It isn't just about feeling bad. It's just being present for all of it.
Yeah, being present. But I'm also not against letting people numb themselves for as long as they feel like they need to. Like, I can't give a shit.
That's the escape mechanism. We all need them. So why take them away? We all need them.
Yeah.
If your escape mechanism isn't hurting you and it's not hurting anybody else in your life, and you know, it's you know, I don't know. I'm not gonna tell anybody else how to live their life.
Yeah, and it's not by that it's also long-term harmful. Like, I just don't, you know, I think we'll find out on that later because we're dealing with the wave of like dopamine input that's never really been available for people. So we're going to find out what it does to the human brain to have this much fucking dopamine going off all the time. But I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I love absolutely love your like overall libertarian kind of mindset about all of it. No, I mean it. And I don't, obviously I don't, I mean that like small L, like non-politically.
Yeah.
As just a Texan where, you know, where I come from and my culture is very, very entrenched in like, we don't give a fuck. Just yeah. don't tell us what to do ever.
Yeah.
Like anything we yeah. want to do, especially if it's on our own property, we don't even owe you a story of what happened. Like it's our business. Yeah. Don't worry about it. I think that can go too far sometimes, but, but I'd rather, I'm almost always err on that because I feel like when you start taking that away is when you have those problems. That's when you start handing other people diet books because you think you fucking know.
You start banning books. You start everything. Yeah, that's
banning
right
books. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yep. Or telling other people, yep. this is what's good for you. It's not what's good for you. You know, it's crazy and it's a tough balance because also like, I don't think people should be able to pollute. So we should not let them do that. You know, it's definitely a balance, but on a personal individual level, all this stuff, I feel like you're like on the verge of eventually writing like an auto bio that's like titled Mind Your Own Business or some shit. Like go fuck yourself. Something that's just like, you know, listen. Like very, it feels like that's the story you're overall. I mean, I'm hearing like acts one and two to the story of like Lauren standing up. You know what, everybody, I've been thinking about it. Mind your own fucking business. Just that's the answer. That's the key.
I mean, there's just so much for us all to learn when we just let go, you know, thinking we know anything. So it's like, you know, even. Yeah, I'm just very, very grateful for this unexpected journey and healing I've had around, you know, all the stuff that we've been talking about, because it's just made me be like, I get to choose how I see the world. I get to choose that it's like, you know, in morality around food, it's also descriptors of bodies have been weaponized, you know. You know, fat is used as a weapon. And it's like, that's right. not a bad word.
No.
It's a descriptor. Yep. So it's like, how do we, you know, change and it's.
I say it about myself all the time and I watch people flinch. I'm like, I was a fat kid or I was fat. I've said it several times in this conversation. And I can almost hear and feel people listening to it going like, wow, Rob, be kind of rude to yourself. It's like, no, I was a round child. Like I had fat on me. It's okay. Uh-huh. I'm me. It's okay.
Yeah. So we're, you know, it's like, it's just like, okay, you know, yeah, maybe my autobiography, what would it be? Yeah, maybe it is.
It's in the ballpark.
Mind your own, maybe it's not mind your own business because it's like, I'm very happy to be, it's definitely taken. And I'm very happy for everyone to know the ins and outs of all of it. But it's just kind of like, We can't tell each other what to think or believe or what's right or what's wrong or, and you know, I don't know. I mean, yes, in certain ways when it's in many ways that is actually very important, like for many topics, but I don't know, in terms of just speaking specifically about the way I move through my world and the move through the world in my own body, like I get to decide how I feel about my body and I and can see beauty in literally every single person. Our bodies are like awesome terrains.
I have to say,
beautiful terrains.
You're right. You're right. And I really think we could talk about this for a really long time. So I got to kind of.
I know we could have like 3 hours.
We really could because I have so fucking much about it. I've got to wrap it up. But I really, I really, really appreciate, and I have to say this because there are so many liberal causes around so many different areas that I don't need to like list them, but body positivity is definitely something I care about. I grew up overweight. I've been way skinnier than I am now and not happy. I feel like good about where I'm at. I'm like with you on so many of these levels. And I love hearing you talk about it and the way you talk about it because there are so many other people who share our views, but they hold this kind of condescending, preachy tone when they shout other people down who aren't following the rules, aren't doing the this or that. And I think you so have the right attitude about it, which is like, first of all, before everything else, no other opinions. Me, it's about, I'm only talking about myself. I wouldn't begin to talk about other people. I talk about human bodies as a generic thing, but I'm not going to point to some person and be like, she's unhealthy, he's unhealthy. I don't know, dude. That should be everybody's take. Because like you said, we're not doctors. We're not here to diagnose if someone's, maybe a higher BMI possibly would lead to someone being unhealthy in most situations. But either way, as that might be applied to an individual, you and I have no business even talking about it. We won't even know what the fuck we're seeing. And that's the right way.
BMI is even an antiquated thing as well. Yeah.
Whether it's something simple like legalizing pot or something more complicated like trans rights or body positivity, all these things, it's got to come down to respecting just individuals and just saying, like, most of the time we probably don't know what we're talking about.
And we're all learning and unlearning. And we all need to give ourselves the space for that. It's been 10 years of really asking myself these questions. And I am so grateful now that after all this time, it's no longer a thought that monopolizes all the space in my brain.
Right.
You know, I look at myself in the mirror and I'm very... Yeah, and like that's all it is, right? It's like, if we can make people be so focused on minimizing themselves in this world, they're going to have no time to really think about how we can make this world a better place.
We have no time.
If we're just so distracted by, I am not enough and I need to change and I am literally starving myself, there's no space for all the possibilities for everything I can squeeze out of this life.
I am so grateful for this conversation, Lauren, and I'm very grateful that you are on the show. And I think and hope and pray with my whole being that everybody who's ever listened to the show listens to this whole thing, because I think because I think you have a lot of really great things to say that are a lot bigger than yourself. I don't hold everybody to talk about stuff like that on the show. We always talk about whatever ends up coming up.
Whatever comes up.
Yeah, but I think you have a really good sensibility about some of this stuff. And, especially the body positivity thing and the diet culture and all these different things. I'm so glad that movement has you in it and has you loud about it. I think that movement wins more with people like you. And that's what I want for it. And that's what I want for you, for us, truthfully, because I care about that a lot too.
Yeah.
And there's a lot. Yeah. And a lot of these issues, like I said, there's a lot of voices that I feel like as much as they support it, the way they support it doesn't help always. And it's not always an open dialogue, which is what is needed, especially when you're trying to build allies, not remove them from your team.
Yeah. And I see it as that's where they're at in their healing journey.
And it is.
Great.
And it is.
And that's it. And that's
it
great.
It just could be a
and,
drag you know, when you're like, it's... we're trying to fucking pull this giant horse that's dead in the sand.
Yeah.
Pick up a rope.
Yeah.
But you're pulling a lot. And I really think it's a good thing for everybody. Lauren, thank you so much. And we'll have to have you on very soon again.
Okay. Oh, yeah. It was great to talk to you, Rob.
Bye, dear.
Bye.